She found me at the bar on my corner. The oldest bar in Brooklyn, according to her dog-eared guidebook. It wasn't exactly what she had expected. She adored the stained glass windows and all the old mahogany, like the choir of a cathedral, she said. But she was disappointed they didn't serve cocktails. At least you came along, she laughed, once we were a few rounds in and had gotten friendly with each other. She touched my arm, letting her fingertips linger in the crook of my elbow, blushing at her own boldness. I can still see myself there, seeing her for the first time. I had stopped in for a nightcap after an arduous day at the office, and at first I was convinced I had made a mistake. On Thursdays, the bar was always a madhouse, and on that night it was so crowded, so chaotic, that I almost turned around and walked out. Then I saw her. She was perched by herself at the bend of the broad wooden bar, her dark head bent over her book as bodies blundered around her, careless voices flaring like firelight against the walls. She alone was serene, unbothered by the bedlam, the signal in the noise. I took the empty stool beside her, and she looked up at me, her face warmed with a garnet glow from the window above. She smiled. My Miriam. Since they didn't serve cocktails, we made do with whiskey. One, and another, and another. I paid for it all. We inched closer to each other on our bar stools, our kneecaps locking together like a well-worn wooden toy. She told me about her childhood in Paris. Her maternal grandparents owned a successful kosher butcher shop on the cobblestoned Rue des Rosiers in the increasingly posh Marais. As a child, she'd spent long afternoons and Sundays helping out around the store, learning the cycles of soaking and salting to draw the blood from the meat. When she thought of home, she didn't see her parents, a stern obstetrician and a depressed housewife prone to migraines, or their small heirloom-filled apartment near Place des Vosges, but rather her grandfather in a spotless white apron, her grandmother handling money with a kerchief tied over her hair, ruby slabs of beef, thick knobs of lamb shanks, pale chicken parts nestled like newborn kittens. Desperate to get away from home, she had gone to the University of Provence, several hours south of where she grew up. There she studied Courbet and the other realists, smoked cigarettes, slept with men, ate formerly forbidden foods like moule frites and pork sausage. She worked as a waitress, a barback, a nanny, but only when she needed more cash than her monthly allowance could provide. At 25, she gained access to her trust fund and could begin to travel. Weekends in Barcelona and London, a month in Rome, always on her own. This was her first trip to the States, though she'd been to Montreal once before. She was in New York for a little more than a week, but she wished she could stay longer. But why alone? I asked. Why not with friends? Aren't you lonely? Why should I need anyone else? They would just hold me back. I told her my own story, a version of it, anyway. I glossed over my childhood on Long Island, flat land of strip malls and forever flooded basements, leaving out all the meaningful details. I spoke of my scholarship to Amherst, my move to the city, my ascent from creative intern to junior art director. I did not tell her that I had no plans to stay in Brooklyn, or that I only lived there because it was the accepted way station for young people who'd gone to good colleges. Brooklyn was just a stop before settling down. And of course, I did not tell her why I wanted to settle down so desperately, or why I ached to assume the status of husband and father. That would have required me to explain my own upbringing, and those hurts were far too ugly for a first encounter.